Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. We are diving deep today into a novel that, well, it's just an absolute testament to how people use literature, not just for pleasure, but for profound survival, the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
Oh, it's a genuinely beloved book. And I think what makes it so special, you know, is its origin story, which kind of mirrors the story within the book, actually. It was the only novel by the late American writer, Mary Ann Schaffer. She apparently became fascinated by Guernsey's history after a trip where she got fog-bound.
Right. And it became this wonderful collaborative act, too, didn't it? When her health declined, her niece, Annie Barrows, stepped in to finish it, keeping that original, incredibly warm vision intact. But let's set the stage for you, the listener. We're in 1946, so immediately after World War II. And the focus is on something maybe less talked about, the German occupation of the British Channel Islands.
Exactly. That five-year occupation of Guernsey, specifically, is really the crucible for this whole story. And the novel's mission, if you like, is simple, but so powerful. It explores how ordinary people manage to preserve their humanity, their community, really through the solace of sharing words during this extraordinary crisis. And it's all told through letters, which gives it this incredible intimacy. You feel like you're right there.
So our way into this world is through Juliet Ashton. And initially, she's a bit of a contradiction, isn't she? Professionally flying high, but somehow spiritually adrift.
That's it, exactly. Juliet's a 32-year-old writer in London. She's actually quite famous for these funny columns she writes under the name Izzy Bickerstaff. She's even got this, you know, handsome, wealthy American publisher, Mark Reynolds, who wants to marry her, give her this glamorous life. But she feels this profound emptiness. She's searching for a story, yes, but one that really matters, something deeper.
She seems poised, really, standing right on the edge of finding her, well, her authentic self. And the push comes from something almost absurdly small.
It really does. The catalyst is just an unexpected letter out of the blue. She gets this correspondence from Dossie Adams, who's a pig farmer over on Guernsey. He'd found her name written inside a secondhand copy of Charles Lamb's Essays of Alia.
Ah, Charles Lamb.
Yes. And he writes to her simply asking if she knows where in London he might find more books by Lamb. A very straightforward request.
Just a simple literary transaction, you'd think, but it becomes completely life-altering, this literary bridge, as you might call it, this tiny thing. It starts this massive transformation for her. But Dossie, in that first letter, he mentions this wonderfully specific group, the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society. Why the potato peel pie? It sounds wonderfully desperate.
Oh, it absolutely is. And that's the novel's first great nugget of defiance and dark humor, too. The society was literally born from a spectacular lie.
A lie.
Yes. The islanders, you see, were starving under the occupation. They had managed to get hold of a pig somehow and held this secret, totally forbidden feast.
Breaking curfew, naturally.
Of course. So on their way home, you know, probably feeling pretty good from the pork and maybe some hidden wine, they were caught by German soldiers. They needed an alibi right there, right then, to avoid severe punishment.
Ah, okay.
So completely on the spot, they invented the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society. The potato peel pie part, apparently it was just the first thing they could think of to explain why they might have slightly suspicious breath and be out so late.
That is fantastic. Human ingenuity under pressure. And I love that pivot, you know, from this act of desperation to something genuinely meaningful. What started to save their skins quickly evolved into a genuine lifeline, as the book suggests.
It really did.
It became this act of intellectual and spiritual defiance against the occupiers. Books became their shield, their common ground.
Absolutely. And the genius of telling it all through letters is that as Juliet corresponds, you meet this whole tapestry of island voices. It's like this ready-made found family just waiting for a revealed letter by letter.
Right. Let's look at that tapestry then. We start with the society members themselves. If Juliet begins as this detached observer looking for a story, her whole journey, her arc, is about becoming an active participant, finding the place that finally feels like home.
And then there's Dossie. The man who kicks it all off, this quiet, almost painfully shy pig farmer. He's clearly a man of deep, silent feelings. He kind of represents healing, stability. He really anchors that idea that, you know, the greatest heroes don't always shout the loudest.
Mm-hmm. And you also get this wonderfully eccentric supporting cast through the letters. We meet Amelia Maugery, who seems like the dignified maternal host of the society meetings. But my personal favorite has to be Isola Pribby.
Oh, Isola. She's priceless, isn't she?
Yeah.
The eccentric herbalist who sells potions, studies phrenology, and she owns a parrot named Zenobia. She's definitely the comic relief, but also embodies the island's quirky resilience.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't forget Eben Ramsey, the wise old fisherman who's carrying this grief over his grandson, Eli, being evacuated.
These characters are absolutely the lifeblood. But the emotional core of the novel and the central mystery driving Juliet, it revolves around someone who's conspicuously absent from the correspondence, Elizabeth McKenna.
Yes, she is without doubt the most powerful presence in the whole novel. Even though she never writes a single letter herself, she's described as the heroic and tragic heart of the story. Her absence creates this pull, this need to understand what happened. The islanders talk about her with this mix of deep love, awe, and profound sorrow. They paint her as fiercely compassionate, incredibly brave, and really the original inspiration for the society continuing beyond that first night.
And central to her legacy, of course, is her young daughter, Kit McKenna, who seems to embody Elizabeth's own unbreakable spirit and is just lovingly cared for by the entire community, isn't she?
She is, and it's Kit's presence, I think, that really anchors Juliet's emotional pull towards Guernsey. It crystallizes the conflict she feels, pitting the genuine warmth and connection of Guernsey against the, well, the superficial life offered back in London.
That's the core internal conflict right there, the choice she has to make between the kind of surface level success, the glamour, the societal expectations represented by Mark Reynolds, and this authentic, maybe chaotic, but deeply profound connection she's discovering with Dossie, with Kit, with the whole island community.
And that choice becomes unavoidable, really. Juliet decides she can't just correspond anymore. It's not enough. She leaves London. She goes to Guernsey. Initially, maybe it's driven by her journalistic instincts, wanting the full story, but she quickly realizes it's much more than that. It's her emotional future that's actually at stake.
Her arrival is that major turning point in the novel, and she immediately bonds with Kit, doesn't she? Elizabeth's child, the child of the society in a way.
Instantly.
Yeah.
And that's when the truth about Elizabeth, the society's founder, really starts to surface properly. It doesn't come all at once. It's pieced together slowly through these fragmented memories shared by the islanders, private letters Juliet finds, and eventually the painful testimony of others, including someone who survived a French concentration camp.
And this is where the story takes its really heartbreaking turn. And it highlights, I think, the moral grayness of war that the novel handles so well. The revelation confirms that Elizabeth, yes, she fell deeply in love with a German officer, Christian Hellmann, a kind man, and she had Kit with him.
But her ultimate sacrifice, the reason she was arrested, wasn't because of that relationship. Christian had already died by then. No, she was arrested and deported to the absolutely brutal Ravensbrück concentration camp for defiance, for hiding and helping a starving man.
And just to clarify that historical detail for you, the listener, this man was a worker from the Tott organization.
Right. The Tott organization, that was the German engineering group, responsible for huge construction projects, like the fortifications on the Channel Islands. And they relied heavily on forced labor, essentially slave workers, during the occupation. Elizabeth risked everything to save one of them, an act of pure compassion.
And that act led directly to the tragic climax of her story. Juliet learns that Elizabeth was ultimately shot, killed, while defending another prisoner from a guard at Ravensbrück. Her sacrifice, learning about it, it just completely strips away any lingering desire Juliet might have had for that superficial London life.
It really solidifies everything for her. And then Mark Reynolds, the publisher, actually arrives on Guernsey. He tries to reclaim her, bringing all the glamour and expectations of London with him. But he fails utterly, doesn't he?
Completely. He just can't connect. He doesn't understand the island, its quiet, deep values. His presence really just clarifies Juliet's final choice.
Exactly. She rejects Mark. Rejects that life he represents. And she decides to stay on Guernsey. She formally adopts Kit, giving the child a mother, and finding, really, the family and the home she never knew she needed in the process.
And the novel ends with that just joyous, deeply satisfying final letter, where Juliet, who no longer needs her witty defenses or any pretense, she proposes to Dossie, the quiet, dignified farmer who started it all with a simple letter about Charles Lamb.
It's such a perfect ending. So if we step back and look at the whole journey, what are the key things that stay with you? For me, the absolute core message has to be the power of literature. It's just a masterclass in showing how books sustain us.
Exactly. intellectually, emotionally. They might have been physically starving, surviving on, well, scraps. But they were feeding your minds, weren't they? With Charles Lamb, the Brontes, books were their source of community, their shared escape, a mechanism for intellectual freedom, even when their bodies were imprisoned by the occupation.
And that links directly to resilience, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Perfectly symbolized by the title object itself.
Yeah.
The potato peel pie.
Yes. That spar, frankly, unappetizing dish made from scrap.
Awful sounding, yeah.
It's the ultimate symbol of their ingenuity, isn't it? Their ability to create meaning, hope, community, social structure from almost nothing. Resilience distilled into one kind of grim culinary metaphor.
And what's also crucial, I think, is how the novel handles the moral complexities of war. It's mature about it. By including characters like Christian Hellman, the kind German officer Elizabeth loved, it deliberately avoids a simple black and white good versus evil picture. It shows us that war is lived by individuals, defined by individual human choices, acts of kindness, acts of cruelty across enemy lines.
That's very true. And finally, we have to mention the brilliance of the epistolary structure itself, the way it's told through letters. Because we read the letters as Juliet reads them, we become active participants, don't we? We're piecing together the trauma and the triumphs of the island's history right alongside her.
You really do. You experience the immediacy, the intimacy of their lives through their distinct voices. You know, Isola's quirky notes, Juliet's wit, which changes over time, Dawsey's quiet tenderness that comes through, even without many words.
It all seems to revolve around Juliet's search for one specific thing, authentic connection. There's that line she writes about marriage.
Oh, that's a key one.
She says, "I don't want to be married just to be married. I can't think of anything lonelier than spending the rest of my life with someone I can't talk to, or worse, someone I can be silent with."
That's it. That captures her entire journey, finding someone and a place where she can finally be silent, where she belongs without needing to perform. That's the authentic peace she finds on Guernsey. It's fundamentally a novel about finding home, not just finding success.
It truly is, and it manages to be this rare thing, a genuine comfort read that doesn't shy away from deep trauma and suffering. It celebrates hope and kindness and the creation of, you know, chosen families right in the face of despair.
It really reminds us that sometimes the quiet, almost domestic acts of courage, sharing food, sharing books, protecting someone vulnerable, these are the things that define true heroism.
Whether it's sharing a forbidden pig roast or defending a fellow prisoner at Ravensbrück, it seems connection, community, and literature really are the ultimate tools for survival.
Beautifully put.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Apatra Foundation.